Hello and welcome to this podcast. I'm Francis Seely from GlobalNet 21, and this is one of the many podcasts that we've been doing, and this one is in the sort of series called Conversations Across Borders, and we're doing that with an organization called Trace Dreams, and we're working together to get a number of speakers and contributors, and it's where we try to look at national and international issues, but how they interact with each other on a global dimension. And today we've got James David Parker. Now, James is someone who's been an advisor to government. He's worked when he was younger in government departments as a researcher. For example, he worked with Hilary Benn when he was International Development Secretary. And he believes that we've got real problems at our global level, that we haven't got in place the right structures and processes of global governance to tackle the real problems that we face today. And clearly, one of those is climate change. So welcome to this webinar, James, and I'm glad you're with us today. Maybe we could start, if you could tell us very briefly a little bit about your own background and your interest in international concerns.
Okay, well, it's been a process for a long time, since about the age of 15, when in 1997, Tony Blair won, and the New Labour movement became centrefold within national politics. And it was clear to me that we needed an inspirational, optimistic approach to politics at a national level. But however, since the, obviously, 2001, September 11th, and then the process with George Bush, clearly the global side became more and more dominant. And so I, during my doing my degree in politics, I became an intern for Hilary Benn. And Hilary Benn is a very decent man, and he's very effective in what he does. And he was a great international development secretary. As an intern, I began to realize through reading a lot of books on ecology, books on philosophy, books on Eastern and Western philosophy, international legal jurisprudence, it was clear to me that even though the individual people, like Hilary Benn, were very effective, very noble in what they did, the structure itself was limited.
Well, let's go through the sort of the structure and that bit by bit. I mean, it's quite nice to know your background. Just one other thing people ought to know. You're also a conjurer, aren't you?
And I didn't know you were going to mention that.
Well, I'm going to mention it because conjuring magic is quite interesting because that's about illusion and seeing beyond the illusion into reality. And that sort of rings a tone in politics, where politics often creates an illusion, and we have to look through that to look at the reality.
Yes, I'd say during that whole process, because when I was very young, I got very absorbed and very interested in magic as a hobby. And then as an activity, I got involved in magic competitions and won some significant ones, some big ones. I've never really got rid of it. I've never really let it go. But I'm fascinated. I love it. But I think studying it in that, from the perception of reality and how we perceive the world, did help. Because obviously I don't just do conjuring tricks. I go into the deeper philosophical method of conjuring and psychological perception and those things. And so those things did go hand in hand in being able to almost stand outside the box of the situation and see the limitation of our current situation. Now, at the same time, when you have a good government, there's lots of great things that a good government can actually do at a national level. But what's happening now, from my observation of, you know, from the philosophical perspective, the philosophic perspective, and the politic perspective, I had clear insights that national politics can no longer really solve things, particularly like climate change. Now, I would say...
So if they can't solve issues like climate change, let's start by saying what's wrong with them. You know, what is it that is there that makes them incapable of tackling the problem?
Yeah, so Mark, if we go back to my old process of coming from this perspective, and particularly say international development, it clear to me, even though there was an incredible amount of projects that the government did at that time, and also outside NGOs, etc., they was all doing very effective things. But from my observation, I saw a clear limitation with obviously the economic model, which was not necessarily capitalism itself, because I won't go into that just now, but I would say predominantly it's nation states competing against one another for economic control, you know, for the situation where one country needs a certain amount of jobs, needs a strong economy, needs its currency running at a very good rate. And so this national economic structure creates a competition between nation states. And obviously at a transnational level, particularly global corporations, they can obviously maneuver like a game of chess in relation to that, where governments become more of an agent, more of a middleman between the success of the nation for the people and for the businesses, et cetera, and the transnational corporations that want to make profit.
Yeah, so, but if you say that the problem is nation states and they compete against each other, and we're going into a period of our history now where through populism and nationalism that's growing, how are you going to confront that problem?
That's a very good question. And I went for a stage almost letting go of this and thinking, looking at the collective perspective of globalization, there is enormous reaction against globalization, and rightly so. I mean, there are lots from an economic position. Globalization is causing a significant amount of problems at a national level. So there is enormous reaction against globalization and nationalism, regression. National, there's nothing wrong with patriotism, and in fact, patriotism can be a fantastic thing for international cooperation and international agreements, like the Olympics. They all compete, but they all at the end hug and have a big celebration. But nationalism obviously has a venom that is aggressive and is destructive and tribalistic and is anti-foreigners, etc. And so what has happened is that it has creeped in because of this enormous understanding of globalization through the internet. And I think what's happened there is there's been a clear fear of security, a clear fear of losing an identity in this massive gray area of globalism that has emerged. And because most people don't spend their time intellectually studying these things.
What I'm trying to get at, what I don't quite understand, is that on one hand you say, you know, there's a reaction to globalization, quite rightly, because there are problems there. There's growth in nationalism and there are problems there. What is it that you want that's in between that or above that that could tackle the problems?
Okay, so my book that I have here is more about the humanitarian perspective. So it's clear that the current system of international treaties, international cooperation, works in some areas. So we're not going to say it's 100% a failure. However, on very significant issues, it's going to take an incredibly long period of time for a development of success. We're talking a long period of time. But what's happened is a spanner has gone into the works, and that is climate change. And climate change really cannot, I think, at a kind of unconscious level, everybody is beginning to sense this, that the current system cannot solve climate change. The current structure that we have today, which is nation states competing against one another for economic control, with transnational corporations playing a strategic alliance in relation to that.
So what would you do in the climate change area that would make a positive difference at a global level?
Yeah, so the next one in relation to that is that we have to move now in the same way that corporations already exist, which is transnational, which is the fact that corporations already almost floating like, you know, clouds above these fixed national structures. And what needs to happen, we need to go into more of a humanitarian perspective, where we function together as individual human beings. Now, that's obviously can sound utopian and idealistic, but it's not, because if you look at the wall that we're hitting now with actually trying to solve climate change, that it really is the only real solution. And the only real solution is the fact that as it needs to move beyond the nation state, it needs to be in relation to individual people working together. Now, when I say individual people, I don't necessarily mean people, you know, ordinary people, although they do, civil society does have a significant role, but also organizations like NGOs, charities, groups, etc., that have an ethical focus. I do generally believe the only real solution is for these organizations beginning to organize themselves together into one organization, into one cooperative process, a global cooperative framework that not only becomes similar to the International Red Cross and similar to, say, the International Trade Congress, similar to that. However, I do believe that if a significant amount of people do organize together, then it does begin to have a level of authority. Now, when I say authority, I do not mean some kind of control authority, but action-based human beings working, individual people working together.
I mean, that's sort of interesting. I mean, some people might say, well, we've got that already through the United Nations. Are you saying we need to do something different outside of that? We need to get, for example, as you said, the NGO area, the non-government organizations working together, almost as if they were a major corporation, but their focus is humanitarian?
It is, yes, I'd say it's similar, and I wouldn't use the word corporation because people may get, you know, the wrong impression of that, but it does need to have a situation where organisations begin to no longer, because at the moment what's happening, I think, so you've got Greenpeace, Friends of the Earth, you've got a number of different organisations all protesting against government, and they're doing good things here and there. But if you was to imagine them beginning to actually work together, and then get significant people like Al Gore on board, you know, the Dalai Lama, et cetera, you would create a momentum that is pretty much never been done before.
And so this would be across borders, would it? It would be global, yeah. And it would almost become an alternative government in some ways.
Kind of. I wouldn't like to use the word government. If you look at, say, because it's not fixed, it wouldn't be a fixed thing. If you look at, say, how the internet works and also how, say, the stock market works, it works in this constant process of change, constant process of development in response to, you know, human development, human psychology. So what really is happening is the global level, that is what's happening now, is that it's beginning to be a mirror of the global mind, the global perspective. But the problem is it does not have an organized structure. It's anarchy. It's all over the place. And nation states are trying to, well, not all of them, but some of them, I'll say the more Scandinavian model, the Canadian model, and the European model in general, are trying to regulate something which in many ways, not 100%, but significantly, is not possible to regulate because it is global in nature. And a nation state is national in nature. And so there's this difficulty, there's this wall that the national governments and the people within that who obviously want to, say, regulate climate change, there's a wall there, an economic wall that they cannot get through. And so what's happened is that you develop theories like Extinction Rebellion, that I do have a lot of respect for, and I think they're also very intelligent, and they are doing good things. However, I don't think it can truly be the same. I mean, it's a step in the right direction. However, because it's fighting against a system, and I don't think this idea of fighting against a system is the solution. I think what really needs to happen is inspiration. It needs to be cooperation between people. And it needs to be action on the ground. So if you look at, say, the International Red Cross, when there is a time of war, the International Red Cross would go in there and it would be an action-based process of actually solving the problem. So I think that there needs to be a level where these NGOs and these individual people who ethically care do need to begin to actually take it into their own hands and simply just do it. As the famous, Nike, just do it. And Steve Jobs would talk about this a lot, and Bill Gates talked about this as well. This idea of just doing it, you know. And if you look at, say, it's good to actually mention Bill Gates in relation to this. And also Musk as well, is because they are in their own field in what they're doing. They are doing that. They're not waiting for governments. Obviously, they have to function within the parameters, the parameters of legislation. They can't be reactive in those things. But they are, I mean, Bill Gates, the stuff he's done in Africa, and, you know, many other philanthropists, you know, have done great things. And they kind of are just doing it. However, yeah, they still cannot fully do it, is because they are once again stuck within an economic paradigm.
But the paradigm, which is a national paradigm in a way, is still there. Now, how do you confront that, say, in climate change, when you've got 10 or 11 years to make a difference, and you've got China, who feels it wants to develop fast, India, who wants to develop fast, Russia, who wants to be a power based on oil and natural gas, and the USA administration, which is in denial? How are you going to make a difference by the model you're suggesting if you don't confront that reality of those large players?
Well, throughout history, there's always been this idea that things are impossible. If you look at, say, the collapse of the Berlin Wall, the end of the Cold War, the rise of Martin Luther King and civil rights, etc., is that all these things do succeed. And what obviously happens is that people, the passion of the people, people begin to work together, people begin to cooperate, and you cannot stop the will of the people. The will of people, I mean, I've been a civil servant, and I've seen, and I've worked for NGOs, etc. But I've seen within there that public opinion is so powerful. And I think ordinary people, so-called ordinary people who just live their life and, you know, don't go into this stuff in great detail, don't realise the power that they really have. Now, I'll take it one step further, and I would say, if an idea is pragmatic, if an idea is feasible, if an idea is effective and it's not reactionary, you can get pretty much, and it's not ideological, so it is something that clearly works.
I was going to say, you talk about two things there. You talk about NGOs coming together, and then you talk about the people. Now, in a sense, people are getting together from social networks. Extinction Rebellion is a global movement that has been really effective, as you said. How are you going to develop this global consciousness of people? Because the NGOs, yes, they can do a lot more. They still get together. But how are you going to get people together on a global scale? I mean, you started Global Resolutions, haven't you? And is that your way of trying to do that?
No, Global Resolutions not mine. It's created by a woman called Melina, and she was also a group of them as well. And they just asked me to become an ambassador there. But one of the main ones is, which is what my book is about, which is, and Global Resolutions, by the way, is certainly part of this and is certainly in the right direction. Yes, and I believe they all need to come together as one movement. And my org part of it, and also a guy called Grant Dive, who's heavily involved in the development of the internet in relation to this as well. But my book, An International Humanitarian Organization, The United Nations of the People, is this idea of NGOs, charities, individual people, basically sitting around tables and actually working together on actual pragmatic solutions. Now, I remember watching a documentary on BBC some time ago where they had almost like a jury system. So they had like ordinary people, so-called ordinary people, sitting around tables and actually solving problems in the world. And it was incredibly effective. And so I would say it's going to be something like that. So at the moment, what it seems to be is that NGOs are fragmented into their separate groups pursuing their own agendas, and good agendas and ethical agendas, but within the limitation of the protest or the petition or the limitation of what they can actually achieve as an individual identity. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to lose their individual brand. But what it does mean is that if they all begin to work together in one umbrella, and it doesn't matter what that umbrella is, it can be global resolutions, it can be my book, the word that my book uses, or it can be the International Simultaneous Policy Organization, it can be even the reform of the United Nations, or it can even, you know, be something, the movement with no name, you know.
How would you start it? I mean, the United Nations was meant to be for the people, that's how it started, but it tends to be United Nations governments and NGOs as well, and businesses. Now, if you had a United Nations of the people, I mean, where would the people come from? How would they organise? And how would the United Nations of the people get formed?
Okay, well, if you look at, say, the United Nations, first of all, when it started, is it started from a very noble position of unifying the world and preventing anything like a world war taking place again and solving the problems through constructive dialogue. However, obviously, what's happened over time, it's become incredibly bureaucratic. It's become very insular. I mean, it's got a good side to it. I'm not saying it's 100% effective.
But because we've only got about 8 minutes left, if you concentrate how we can build up this idea of yours, because if we know what the deficiencies are, what I don't quite understand, and I think what is important to get over, is how you would build up what you think we need.
Okay, well, first of all, the NGOs, the charities, etc. They all need to basically get together around a table, and they need to actually create a very clear commitment that they are all working together under one direction. So not under different directions, but under one direction of solving climate change. It's no longer going to be about, and also the other issues, it's no longer being about protesting against the government. It's no longer about petitioning the government. It's about actually unifying together with big names as well, like, say, Al Gore, Dalai Lama, etc., all getting together and actually finding the solutions that can actually be implemented now, not as some, you know, future utopian idea, or not as some kind of reaction against the government.
But what type of solutions could they implement now, this new organisation? Because we know, for example, in climate change, most of the emissions come from big corporations. And how would the United Nations of the people, who have no power over those corporations, get them to enforce what they want?
Okay, so first of all, what would need to happen is that there needs to be a significant amount of people, like, once again, use names like Al Gore, Dalai Lama, and then Greenpiece, Friends of the Earth, etc. So all getting together to an enormous level and agreeing that we need a level of international regulation, not at a national level, so not at a nation state level, but at a humanitarian level.
But if they agree that, they can't necessarily put it into practice because they don't have the power. So there's a big gap between those aspirations and implementing it. And that's a bit I don't understand how we're going to fill that gap.
But what I previously said about the power of the people is that it's not just some kind of left-wing New Age idea. I mean, it's true in the sense that if you look at through history, things do change when there's a significant amount of people who collectively get together, unify, and it cannot be ignored anymore. It cannot be, when you have climate change is obviously going to be catastrophic So obviously, we cannot let it move towards a regressive process, but we can move into more a survival process or blame situation. People have to move into progressive, inspirational direction. And the only way that can happen is when you have enough people who agree on particular international regulations. I mean, those things cannot be ignored. You cannot, if you were to say like 4 billion people or billions and billions of people agreeing that there needs to be an international regulation, and then all agreeing upon those particular regulations. And we're talking about just normal, sensible people in society. We clearly see that these needs and things need to put in place for the survival of the species. Then there's nothing stopping that from taking place.
Russia and China might stop it. They may not let their civil society organizations be involved.
Yes, that's very true, and that could be a challenge. However, we cannot wait around just because of that. So we cannot say we're not going to do it because China and Russia won't do it. It will just happen organically. It will happen through the organization of the people. And then from that, if they clearly see the Western world and other countries are beginning to, with the people within that, have organized themselves at an incredible level, then Russia and China will hopefully get on board, particularly in relation to climate change being a threat to their very survival as well. And not only that, there are people within those, we'll just leave China for now, but more Russia. There are people within that who will agree with what this movement will be about as well. So from that perspective, you cannot stop a momentum. You cannot stop human development. You cannot stop people wanting to solve problems that clearly have real solutions that have been around for some time.
Okay, so you want this to happen, but have you seen any signs of it happening? What are the signs?
Okay, I think at the moment, we mentioned stuff like Extinction Rebellion, we've mentioned the rise of, say, ethical groups within social media and also the internet beginning to unify, Transition Town, the Integral Movement. And so this is the beginning of it. So what I'm saying is something that is going to materialize and emerge in the future. But we are seeing this already. We're seeing ethical groups beginning to work together and cooperate. And I would say, if you look at, say, 10 to 20% of the global population are willing to do that. You've got the middle people just living their ordinary life, who will then get on board. And then you've obviously got the people who offer only for self-interest.
So you're saying that governments are trailing and we should say, let's forget them. We're not necessarily forget them, but let's go and do our thing as well and make them follow us rather than them trying to get us to follow them.
Well, you've just hit the nail on the head. Now, this is not going against governments, because particularly countries like Scandinavian countries will get on board. But I know full well from the government, governments can do lots of things. And also, you cannot say they can't do anything. And it's good to discuss and to get politicians to sign up to ideas. But however, on climate change itself, I would say national governments cannot solve the problem. And so it needs to be, I mean, if you look at, say, the civil rights movement of Martin Luther King, etc., it was the people who moved it, and then governments then got on board. Throughout history, that's been the case. Generally, the collective consensus becomes what government eventually does.
But of course, things like the civil rights movement was a national issue and a national protest. But are you saying that that will go global? Because people now recognise that climate change is global in a way that nothing has been as global as that before.
Yes, I agree. And so there's two sides of the coin in relation to that. One side of the coin is that problems are global now. And the other side of the coin is that we have technology that is global. So we have the internet, and we also have global communications, global travel. I know this is one of the problems of climate change, but we have an ability now to communicate with anyone in the world easily through Skype and And there's no real geographical distance, psychological difference anymore when it comes to communication. And so we're going through this exponential non-linear process rather than a very slow process of communication. At the moment, the virus that's taking place across the world, the idea that that would have jumped so quickly all over the world, that virus would never have happened years ago. It was started in the village and it would have expanded outwards like this, whereas now it jumps. Now, this is the same for ideas. Ideas work in exactly the same way. There's no longer an epicenter and it moves outwards and expands outwards. It now jumps. And so that's an exponential non-linear process.
Okay, we sort of come to the end of the 30 minutes, but it does go quick. But let me give you this chance to say, if anybody wants to find out more about your ideas, where do they go? How do they make contact with you?
Okay, well, there is a website at the moment called www.ihoearth.com that's been put together. And I would say that's the idea of it being something like Facebook. So it's this idea of, I mean, the beginning is communications. The beginning is people linking up, discussing, and it becoming a non-ideological, purely practical process, like the International Red Cross would be the closest example of that. And so this website is kind of got the Facebook approach below that, at a humanitarian level rather than just discussing things. And it's got a clear focus of people working together who have good ideas, practical, intelligent, realistic ideas that can solve things like climate change and the things within climate change that needs to be solved. Ideas, engineering ideas, educational ideas, et cetera, and people working together at a social level on the internet, I think, is the beginning. And then from that, obviously, that moves into meetings, etc. Okay. About to actually do things. And then obviously you've got my book as well, which you can get off obviously Amazon and all those things. But there are a number of different books that are coming for now from this global perspective. And I think what's happened is that the nation perspective is something that we are all conditioned to think we all have an identity in relation to the nation state, etc. So the global perspective, there's kind of this cognitive dissonance going off at the moment now with the internet, global travel, etc., and ideas being spread beyond cultural narratives. And so what's happening is that we still have, and rightly, that should never really come to an end. Italians have wonderful approaches, British have wonderful approaches, but what's happening is that the cultural dynamics are now moving beyond the nation state. And so at the moment, this is why we're seeing a significant reaction against that on one side. But there's the other side that's happening as well, where ethical people are moving beyond just the idea of the world citizen, but now it's the idea of actual practical implementations at an international level, at a global level, at an earth-centered level, where there's a global cooperative process, a global cooperative forum. Global cooperative framework through an organizational process. And I think if that takes place, then regulation of economics, it doesn't mean overthrowing capitalism. It means internationally regulating within a sensible framework that is actually progressive. So it's not something that is radical, it's progressive, but it keeps it, which everyone would agree with, you keep it within an ethical dimension.
I'm going to have to stop you there on the ethical dimension, because we've come well over our half an hour, and we try to keep these interviews to half an hour. Okay, so I mean, you've got some really interesting ideas there. You've got some interesting ideas about how we go beyond the nation state and how we do it other than doing it through intergovernmental cooperation and partnerships, and that we do it with people and civil society organizations. And although it's beginning, I'm sure there is a momentum to make that grow, and climate change will make it grow even more so. So thank you for talking to us about those ideas. And I think you've given people a lot to think about. So thank you for doing that. And we'll,
thank you. Thank you for letting me on. It's good to. I've been watching you for a while, so it's really great to finally speak to you and hopefully see you again.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And, you know, we'll end this interview now.